We're hearing the scherzo from Mendelssohn's A Midsummer Night's Dream to set the stage for the dreaming we'll be asked to do this summer. Shakespeare, in his play, invites us into the forest for a play within a play, and some dreaming with real consequences, as we know, as the characters return from their sojourn in the forest. And the dreaming we'll be doing has to do with our future as people here and now on our planet. First, though, we'll take a side trip to visit the English poet Percy Bysshe Shelley, who drew on the character Queen Mab, alluded to by Shakespeare in his tragedy Romeo and Juliet. Mab, a fairy queen who helps humans in the nighttime by bringing on their dreams. Near the culmination of the poem Queen Mab, cosmic fantasy that it is, the poet offers an ode to a future Earth, renovated and redeemed by a fortuitous combination of climate change and rational progress. He writes, "O happy Earth, reality of heaven, to which those restless souls that ceaselessly throng through the human universe aspire, thou consummation of all mortal hope, thou glorious prize of blindly working will, whose rays, diffused throughout all space and time, verge to one point and blend there forever. Of purest spirits, thou pure dwelling place, where care and sorrow, impotence and crime, languor, disease, and ignorance dare not come, O happy earth, reality of heaven, O paradise regained." Shelley's utopian vision imagines both human society and the natural world as purged of illness and vice, a state of heaven on earth, manifested not simply by the liberation from tyranny and superstition, but, believe it or not, by the melting of the polar ice caps and the greening of the deserts as a result, consequent upon a shift of Earth's rotational axis to a perpendicular with its ecliptic. Shelley derives this astronomical vision from earlier cosmologies that attributed shifts in Earth's rotation to causes ranging from geological eruptions and solar rays to human sin and the biblical flood. Today's readers of his poem may or may not sympathize with the political and aesthetic motivations that caused a usually skeptical poet to adopt such far-reaching theories, but Shelley's association of climate change with earthly happiness offers us a tragically misguided vision that should raise questions for all of us. That from the essay, O Happy Earth, Reality of Heaven by Eric Gadol. And so we can see here how dreams of the future can be skewed, as Shelley's were, by his full embrace of a kind of utopianism from his time. Not just the future, though, but the past and present, too. So first we have to understand the various lenses through which we view the world, and then we can be freer to make clear-sighted decisions in our daily lives. So off we go, not to the forest, but to the farm. For the past 6 years, the Farm Arts Collective in Damascus in Wayne County on Willow Wisp Organic Farm has produced an original theatrical work in their project, Dream on the Farm. Tanis Kowalczyk is the artistic director of Farm Arts Collective, and she and composer Doug Rogers paid a visit to the WVIA Benko studio to invite us to dream with them this summer.
In 2020, we started play number one of the Dream on the Farm Decalogue of climate change plays. So we decided, Farm Arts Collective as an ensemble, decided we would like to make one play every year about climate change because scientists were telling the entire world. It was like a kind of global scientific coming together to announce that we needed to keep our CO2 levels down to keep the warming of the planet and to keep it at 350 parts per million. And so we decided as a troupe that we should maybe keep talking about it until that 10-year period that they said we had, 10 years to keep it down, we should be talking about it as a theme for our work as artists and as farmers. And so that's what we've been doing. And get this, we're in year 6.
The ground base, if you'll pardon the pun, the ground base is the same, climate change, but each year you approach it from a different angle and with different characters.
Exactly. So, our troupe also, for the most part, we have the people who are in the troupe year in and year out. And Doug and I both have been making the plays since year one. But the plays change every year. The concept changes, the story changes, and it's really delightful to work on a brand new show every year. And we work as a devise troupe, so we create it together. I'll propose the story, the idea, but then, Doug often is composer in residence and often composes for the show. So he will go off in the winter and start writing the music, which is what he did for this year's show. Yeah.
And I think, too, that when you're doing 10 shows on a theme, you don't want to just be giving people the same message year after year. Every year we've tried to say, well, what is an angle of this that hasn't been covered?
So, for example, say in 2023, it was a story of a farm family that was offered an insane amount of money to sell the land to an eco theme park, a developer, and it was a kind of naturalistic story in a way with lots of music. And then we had another show where it was following two scientists who come back from the dead, Carl Sagan and Lynn Margulis, the great eco-biologist, microbiologist. And we follow their spirits across the farm and meet all kinds of things, like a microbe on a compost pile who's a singer. And, we go on and on with. So there's just so many different kinds of styles of performance that we'll also explore.
It's important to get the science across. We try and give real information. But I think as we've gone on, it's more an examination of the mythology that we get caught up in for why we practice things the way we do in our society. And that's what I feel like this year's show is really hitting on, is the mythology of why we do the things we do.
Yeah, exactly.
You gave us a hint the last time you were here, Tanis, that you had been playing with the notion of the biblical origin, which is a story that reaches into so many authors and musical pieces and paintings. And this is something that you felt you could work with in a theatrical way.
Yeah, so the springboard for this year's performance is Paradise Lost. We looked at John Milton. But we've, of course, gone on our own journey with it, and the performance is entitled Paradise Lost Scavenger Hunt. So we have this really incredible first act where we have a Japanese no theater presentation using an entire libretto and score that Doug has created of selected John Milton texts, where we're telling the story of God creating the universe and the world and humans and Adam and Eve and the angel Satan who challenges God and is expelled from heaven and goes to hell with a company of his angels, her angels. And then the eventual temptation, and we know how the story goes. They are expelled from paradise. And so Doug's taken an incredible selection of Milton text and created a kind of mini opera that we are performing. There are spoken word scenes in the performance, but there are sections of it where it's completely sung, and we have a chorus. We're wearing incredibly beautiful masks. Mm-hmm. God is wearing, the platform shoes, and we're wearing kimonos. This is really a beautiful, beautiful, visually stunning first act in the theater to tell the story of Paradise Lost.
And Doug, you're setting poetry. So does that make it easier? Are the lines working for you?
Yeah, I think that's really what happened. I've been a lyricist for songs for years and years and years. So I know what I'm doing. But it's always a relief when you have the words already written for you, because and there's lots of words in that poem. Yeah, what I found in particular was that the Milton verses are totally rich in lyrical imagery, and that by looking at the way by finding the rhythm of Milton's words, I could find a musical rhythm that would suit those words. And, it just became, it was all consuming, frankly. I spent the whole winter in my little cabin reading that poem and coming up with many of these things.
Maybe we could hear one of the songs, Doug, that you've written.
This is just an example of the way a passage from Milton that many people might be familiar with. They're probably familiar with the phrase that came out of it. So,
and Doug, set it up in our play.
Okay, so Satan has rebelled against God, and he and his angels have been cast out of heaven, and they get sent into the lake of fire. They land in the lake of fire. And in that very difficult situation, Satan has to raise himself out of the fire and say, what are we going to do? And do an appraisal of how we respond to the situation we find ourselves in. So this is Satan's first little step up in speaking to the audience. A mind not to be changed by place or time. The mind is in its own place and in itself can turn a hell into heaven, a heaven into hell. What matter where if I be still the same? What matter where if I be still the same? Here at least we shall be free. The Almighty hath not built here, for his envy will not drive us hence. Here we may reign secure, and to my choice, to reign is worth ambition, though in hell. Better to reign in hell than serve in heaven. Better to reign in hell than serve in heaven. Better to reign in hell than serve in heaven. Better to reign in hell than serve in heaven. From Milton, our man Milton.
Isn't it beautiful?
Yes. Now, what are your characters doing while that's being sung?
Right. Well, they've just undressed Satan and dressed Satan in a really beautiful black and red kimono and changed Satan's mask from the kind of generic, well, it's not generic, but it's a beautiful mask that all the players are wearing. It's like a hand-painted white mask, but then taken, they basically transformed Satan from an angel into Satan herself, played by Jenny Hack, one of our company members, who has a beautiful singing voice and a great actress. And she is transformed into this, just a, kind of like a warrior. She looks like regal and like a warrior now. And they are all singing around her. They've just done this like big movement sequence of falling to hell. And they're basically rising up, as Doug said, out of the lake of fire. And it went from this really loud crashing cymbals, gongs, falling, to this kind of beautiful song. And it's a surprise. It goes against one's expectations. But this whole thing, I really am really interested in keeping that tension between what's expected, what you expect to see about who is Satan and who is Eve and who is Adam. We're really playing with those archetypes. Eve is a curious person. Eve is just genuinely curious about the whole world and wants to eat. When she looks up and sees the apple, she instantly says, oh, I'm so hungry. And God's, no, you're not supposed. So Eve is just like bubbling with life. And it's this curiosity that really gets her goat, you know. And so we're really playing with those archetypes and exploring what we've normally been told about this story and playing with that. And I think for us, like what we've done with this story is use it as a springboard to like go into now 2025, because Act Two is us going into being expelled from paradise and going on to a working organic vegetable farm, Willow Wisp Organic Farm, where we're based in 2025, and asking ourselves and our audience, what paradise are we losing right now? What is the paradise you're losing? And what can we do to find it again? Like, how can we hold on to it or reinvent it or look for that which would define a new paradise and a new world in an environmental, you know, in a healthy environmental way or in a healthy political or socially just way? So those are all the things we're exploring on the scavenger hunt. We're asking the questions about how do we make the world better?
And are you Eve?
I am. Yeah, I mean, I feel like I'm trying to redefine Eve a little bit from an eco-feminist point of view, because she is like Satan in some ways, where she questioned the authority and was disparaged for it in a different way than Satan. But, you know, not to say we have to keep defying everything and authority, but like there's something about it that's worth questioning, you know, when everything is going along in the same direction. And if someone does question it, you know, it's like it's important to listen to that.
Introduce us to your trees, tree of life, tree of knowledge.
Well, our tree of knowledge is very beautiful. We meet it in the theater space. We have hung over 60 apples in the space, and it's like a canopy over the no theater stage. The no theater stage is 18 feet by 18 feet, and above us are all these gorgeous apples hanging. So it's a very well-designed, minimalist space that we've created. We didn't hand paint scenery or anything. Everything is very specific. We have beautiful benches by a local artist named Francis Cape, who's a bench maker. Everything is very aesthetically pleasing in this performance, to be minimalist and good to look at.
Do we begin with music? What's the first sound, or what do we first hear?
Actually, the first song we hear is an ancient pagan Italian folk song called Gloria. And it is sung when God appears and he creates the world. And it's like a three-part harmony with a lot of dissonant sounds. It's really cool.
Yeah, Tennis is a good collector of songs, if you didn't know.
Yeah, and it is a Gloria, like Gloria. And it's like this exaltation song. And so it's a really neat song.
And so you're sending us in the second act out into the farm. And where do we wind up? What kinds of things do we encounter?
Right. So half of the audience follows Adam and half of the audience follows Eve. And some of the stations that they'll encounter, I mean, everyone will encounter the same stations, but we will go to meet someone who's in a maze of sorghum Sudan grass, a big cover crop on our farm. And she is in Dante's Inferno, actually. That's the text she's using. And she's talking about prison and how does one release themselves from prison and from the prison of the mind and the body. And so she's exploring that and just appearing kind of like a muskrat. Every now and again, she pops up out of the sorghum Sudan grass. And then she eventually comes out and talks about prison and freedom of mind. We meet a group of young people. We've been working with a young group, a young company we formed of university age and high school age students. We have six students that we've been working with on this project, mostly from Northeast Pennsylvania, from Wayne County. One, we have a visitor from New Hampshire. But they have a beautiful piece around a scarecrow, and I won't describe it because I want people to come and see it too. So I won't give too much away, but it's this really cool scarecrow that's made out of only electronic materials. And these young people are talking about what their paradise is for them. It's their dreams. And what is getting in the way of them reaching their dreams and how they're trying to achieve that and fighting against it. And so it's this idea of like the modern world around them is actually giving them a lot of pressure. And that's something that we discover. It's very touching. It's really touching. It's a beautiful piece. We go to a small pine grove and have a disco party. That's a kind of a palate cleanser. And then we follow a geologist on a deep time exploration of a timeline of geology where we learn about this one extinction that happened 250 million years ago, where literally 95% of all life vanished. And it's called the Great Dying. And it was a result of when Pangaea, when the world was all one, I guess what caused a lot of the cracks and fissures and the separation was there was just massive eruptions of lava all over the world. And the CO2 filled the air so much so that it made the oceans like carbonic acid. And it was like seltzer oceans and everything was CO2 laden. And 95% of the earth life died. So we're talking about that and then making the comparison to the levels that happened 250 million years ago, what they were measured at, what the CO2 measurements were compared to today. And they're strikingly similar. And then we have the chef who's cooking our apple crisp. She's giving a really beautiful speech. You might know her, Alicia Grega, who's a local Scranton artist. She's performing and just doing a beautiful, beautiful monologue. So honestly, it's just like a treat of experiences about paradise.
And then you all come back together, do you?
Then we will all come back together for Act Three. Doug has another amazing song that we all sing together. But God will ask everybody. God will come out and say, what have you learned? What have you found on your scavenger hunt? And both teams will get to share some of the information that they gleaned and wrote. One of the other things they've done is we've attached all of the words that have been discouraged from being used from the government, the federal government websites. So there's 200 words that we are being discouraged to use if we are getting funded by the federal government. And so we've posted them on a fence line, and we're going to walk, and then we're going to create sentences and poems using those words. And so we'll share those at the end, and God will get to hear that.
We've heard from Tanis about the way the narrative is unfolding. Is there a particular rhythm from one act to the other of the music?
Well, I guess as we moved through a sequence where we talked about the devils and what the devils are up to, which had a lot of rhythmic and frenetic elements. And then as we moved into Paradise, I wanted a much calmer approach, and even to draw the tempo down into a very relaxed and very simple tunes for some of Paradise. So, and we have to get to the dramatic events of the story where Adam and Eve have to face the consequences. And it's a pretty good song for Eve and Adam, who have a duet of that.
Yes, Doug wrote a song recently, right?
Yeah, I had one. I had to give you one more song.
And it's like a really complicated song, and he gave it to Jim Sullivan, who's playing Adam, and I not that long ago, maybe 2 weeks ago. So it's just been a lot of work to memorize that text.
It's good.
Tough.
It's going to be such a good ending for these guys.
It's definitely a work in progress till the last performance.
Should I play one of the Paradise songs? Yeah, because this is a description. I went and found the descriptions in Milton of what Paradise was like, and I was so struck by how he focused on the disobedience of nature, how everything is supposed to be obedient, but nature in its natural state is totally disobedient. So that's why I went for these words of this song. Let's see if I can do it. So on he fares, and to the border comes of Eden, where delicious paradise now nearer crowns with her enclosure green the champagne head of a steep wilderness, grotesque and wild. For nature here, wantoned as in her prime, and played at will, her virgin fancies pouring forth more sweet, wild above rule or art, enormous bliss. Cedar and pine and fir and branching palm, a sylvan scene, and as the ranks ascend, shade above shade, a woody theater of stateliest view, yet higher than their tops, the walls of paradise grew. Nice lyrics, right?
I mean, the songs are so evocative. The tunes he's writing are really interesting too, and the two together are making some very interesting original music. Yeah.
The fact that you send people out of the theater after the first act, it's like they're being expelled from the garden in a way.
Exactly. And in fact, we're trying to like really create a visceral experience. When they enter the space for the no theater presentation of Paradise Lost, they're given an apple. The audience is given an apple and they're told not to eat it. And then when the apple lowers, Satan, literally, we see Satan lowering the apple to Eve's mouth and it's hanging there. And then she's like, Adam, help me. She's about to eat it. And then Adam comes in and says, don't do it. And she says, come on, wouldn't God love us even more if he sees us choose to act righteously with knowledge? And he's like, don't do it. I don't do it. If you love me, do it, Adam. Help me, help me. I'm going to do this, Adam. I'm going to do this without you if you don't. And he's like, I will not abandon you. And then he eats it with her. And it's like they're literally eating this hanging apple between them. All the devils are there with their apples and they're eating, and a sign appears and we tell the audience, eat the apple. So they get to taste what Adam and Eve are tasting at the same time. And then when they, Adam and Eve, are pushed out, they too are pushed out to the daylight and the sun and whatever.
They can't forget that.
I hope not. I mean, I hope it's like a really visceral experience.
Dream on the Farm is a major project, but it's not all that you do, and people can attend many of the workshops and productions that you present.
Yeah, we have a whole season that's going to run until the end of the year, basically. We have more festivals of theater. We have a lot of cool workshops on fermentation, on making soups. Please come. Honestly, it's worth checking out our website because there's a pretty eclectic mix of farming, art, food, ecology, social justice, health, all these subjects. We put our attention to these subjects at Farm Arts, and that's what we're interested in, uplifting community through these disciplines.
Doug, do you want to play us out with something?
Should we give him the Beelzebub number?
Yeah, do Beelzebub.
Thrones and imperial powers, offspring of heaven, these titles now must we renounce and changing style be called Princes of Hell?
Princes of Hell.
Yeah, Princes of Hell. For so the popular vote inclines here to continue and build up here a growing empire. Doubtless, while we dream and know not the King of Heaven hath doomed this place our dungeon, not our safe retreat, and to remain in strictest bondage, Princes of Hell.
Princes of Hell.
Yeah, Princes of Hell.
Princes of Hell.
What sit we then, projecting peace and war? War hath determined us and foiled with loss. For what peace will be given to us enslaved but stripes? Custody severe. Arbitrary punishment inflicted. Princes of Hell. There'll be some of that.
There'll be some of that, more of that. And we heard from, just then, composer Doug Rogers and Tanis Kowalczyk, who is the artistic director of the Farm Arts Collective. And they have been speaking about Dream on the Farm 2025 Paradise Lost Scavenger Hunt, opening tomorrow evening, and that's Thursday, July 24th, running through August 3rd, 8 shows only. 6:30 is the start time. You're invited to take along a picnic and some refreshments that you can enjoy on the patio before the performance. That's 6:30 when the show starts, July 24th through August 3rd. And the scavenger hunt will take you across the 25-acre farmlands of Willow Wisp Organic Farm. And there is a vehicle transport available if you need some assistance to get across all of the farmlands. And you just let them know when you get your tickets. And Willow Wisp Organic Farm is located in Damascus, Pennsylvania, in Wayne County. And for more information, on the web, farmartscollective.org, farmartscollective.org. Dream on the Farm 2025, Paradise Lost Scavenger Hunt, opening tomorrow evening, July 24th at 6:30, running through August 3rd, 8 shows only, again 6:30 p.m. And for more information, farmartscollective.org.